My name is Nada Ahmed, and I am your host for the Braving Innovation Podcast. I believe every company and team can bring new products and services to market and achieve immense success in creating sustainable and profitable business models. Through this podcast, I bring to you inspiring stories, tips, and strategies from leaders all around the world so that you can excel on your journey as an entrepreneur, innovation leader, and investor. Welcome to Braving Innovation.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Braving Innovation. And today I am honored to have with me Amy Jo Martin joining us from Austin, Texas. She is an American author, speaker, entrepreneur, and investor. She's the author of New York Times bestseller book, Renegades Write the Rules. She's also the host of a top-notch podcast called Why Not Now, where she has people like Mark Cuban and a lot of other famous people on. And she's also the founder of Renegade Accelerator Program. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you for having me, Nada. I'm in Texas here, Austin, Texas. It's warming up, so I'm in your home state.
I'm here in Oslo and a little bit jealous because we had a little bit warmer weather last weekend and then it got cold again. So we're hoping that over the next couple of weeks, we can see some more signs of spring. So thank you for being here, Amy. And one of, you know, a tradition of this podcast is to ask my guest, since it's called Braving Innovation, tell us about a time when you had to be exceptionally brave and really step outside your comfort zone.
I love this topic. I love this conversation. And, you know, the first thing that pops into mind is when I was younger, we moved around often. So we lived in a mobile home in a trailer, and I would run away almost daily because I wanted to go see what else was out there. And my parents knew I'd always come back. But something about craving the unknown is just in my blood. And, you know, innovation is, you know, something that I think curiosity is a bit of a hobby that I have, and you can't really have one without the other. I think of a time, there was a really critical moment in my life and in my career when I was working in the NBA. I had been in marketing, ad agency world, brand world, and then I was in professional sports right at the turn of the 05-06 season into 08-09, when digital and social was really just becoming something that was more monetizable, was more tangible for us to sell against in the NBA for sponsors and stuff. So just started experimenting. I have a theory that when you're experimenting, you cannot fail. So you just have a petri dish and you write beta on the side of it, and everybody kind of leaves you alone a little bit with those KPIs, and they back up and they say, well, it's in beta. You know, this is a test. So I started experimenting and definitely had some wins and asked a lot of forgiveness instead of permission, especially with social media. And I refer to it as social communication because it's communication, not media, right? It's a dialogue, not a monologue. And this was early days, and I just started on my own and ended up working with one of the most iconic athletes in the world, Shaquille O'Neal, and helping him. Kind of an interesting pinnacle moment where I'm sitting at my desk as the director of new media and research, right? Before we had a title of digital media, because it included mobile and, you know, obviously email and social and interactive. And the phone rings. I'm sitting at my desk and the phone rings, and it's Bob from basketball operations. And he said, Amy Jo, get down to the locker room right now. Shaquille O'Neal wants to learn how to tweet, and he doesn't know how. Nobody in this building knows how. Get down here. Click. Long story short, I go down there and show him what I know, which is maybe 10% more than everybody else, not 100% more. I mean, and that edge just continued to grow. And there was a moment on the team plane about 2 weeks later when I'd had my hand slapped a lot. We were making ESPN headlines at night. And there was a lot of people uncomfortable with what I was doing because we didn't have rules. And so I was told, hold up, the league office in New York is writing some rules, Twitter timeout for you, right? And I was like, this train has left the station. We were rocking and rolling, and both of our followings were growing to now over a million for me and tens of millions for him. And I'm sitting on the team plane next to my boss, And she said to me, you know, we need to hold up on this social media stuff. Mm. Well, I get a text message from Shaquille O'Neal, who's sitting at the front of the plane. We're headed to play the Lakers. The plane hasn't taken off yet. And he said, can you come up here? I have a question. Well, I knew if I went there, I would get fired because I wasn't supposed to be working with the players on this stuff. We're entertaining some sponsors and partners that were also sitting by us. And I just kind of sink down in my chair and I'm thinking, no, I can't respond. Well, he responds again. And then he stands up. Well, Shaquille is 7 foot plus tall. And he said, get up here. Well, nothing a 7 foot tall person does goes unnoticed. Everybody's watching. I climb over my boss, walk down the aisle, and I get down there to help him. And he starts to tell his athlete friends, his colleagues, you should hire her. She'll help you build your brand online and do what she's doing for me. And I said, Shaquille, I work for the team. You can't hire me. And he said, well, maybe you shouldn't. So I walk back to sit down, pretty sure I'm going to take a Southwest Airlines flight home because I'm getting fired. And here's the kicker. This is the moment. My butt hits the seat. And she said, you know what, Amy Jo, you're a renegade. And there's something about the sound of that that I just loved. And that's the moment I texted Shaquille and said, I'm going to start my own company, kicked that entrepreneurial spirit door open. And he wrote back within minutes and said, great, I'll be your first client. And that was 2009. And the rest is history. Now I have a company called Renegade Global, a book called Renegades Write the Rules. So I fully do live this concept of paving paths that haven't been paved before.
Yeah. And tell me what was it like that first time when you were in the locker room, you had to go in that locker room and meet Shaquille O'Neal, and you were, you know, still young woman in this very masculine environment, and you're standing in front of this really tall man. How did you feel?
Yeah, I think, of course, there was nerves. And as I was walking to the elevator, I'm calculating what's the worst thing that can happen if I go down there and do this, right? You're just calculating it through. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the first things I suggest people do. Identify that worst case scenario, because you don't start there. First, just ask yourself, what if this doesn't work? Then what? And keep answering that question from then what, all the way through, from the moment you green light the idea to the worst case scenario. When we do that, two things happen. We realize it's going to take longer than we think to have that happen. I'm not getting fired today. Let's just put it that way. Maybe in a month or two, but it's not going to happen today. I can course correct, you know, I can find my way to take out some insurance and work through this. But if that fear had kept me from going in those elevator doors, I don't know that I'd be sitting here, right? Because it was a moment of bravery, a window, an opportunity of bravery. If I thought it through too much, I might have overthought it. It closes, it's gone. Same with texting Shaquille. I'm going to start my company. It's like green light, get started. The execution is another phase, but first you just have to get past that finish line or that starting line. Yeah.
And I think that's usually a hurdle for most people, is like just going for that, you know, impulse, because you feel it, you get the idea, you're like, I want to do it. But then your rational brain kicks in and then you start overanalyzing.
Yes. And you know what is another example that's so highly relevant right now? I help women get more seats on cap tables. So I want women to have a seat at the cap table, not just at the table, meaning more equity, more ownership, more influence, power, capital for themselves. And I remember my very first ever angel investment, what it was like writing the check 13 years ago, and how scary that was. And it was a pretty small check at the time. But now, watching so many other women learn and do that for themselves, you start to grow and get more comfortable with being uncomfortable. You learn, like, that intellectual capital is more insurance. And that was scary, you know, to write that check. And now I'm so grateful because I've learned so much that I can share with others. And it's one of my favorite things to do, is invest in other founders and women.
And that's great. And that's something that I am really passionate about too. Like you're saying, I mean, if you look at the data and see how many women investors we have, and then how many women who actually get the founders, women founders who get investment, it's dismal. It's like a global average. I think in the US it's 2%. In the Nordics, I'd say maybe it's about 4% in Northern Europe. But we need sort of more women, more diversity on that table so that we can give access to more capital to a diverse portfolio of companies.
And, absolutely.
Yeah.
So and would you agree that I feel the only way I've been able to learn is by getting comfortable with asking what could be perceived as a dumb question to some of my male mentors who do, who've been investing all, you know, for decades, and being willing and having those relationships and saying, hey, I don't understand how this works early on. I have felt so grateful to have these, I call them my investor mentors, lead me along and explain, because there is a knowledge gap and it can be extremely intimidating. And I think there's some, you know, misunderstandings at how you can even enter. But it's also about deal flow. If you don't have access to these, then nah, you're not getting in, right? Yeah. So I've been invited in because I've been curious. So I think just asking those questions is so critical, and being willing to get uncomfortable, because there aren't any dumb questions when it comes to investing. It can get very complex. Mm. And there are some simple concepts about it too. So I encourage anyone thinking about it.
That's really good advice. And actually, as I am entering into this field myself, and I've done exactly what you're saying, I kind of reached out to people and said, you know, I'm interested in venture. And you'd be surprised how many men would be willing to let you in and let you into deal flows very early on, knowing, you know, yes, there is this knowledge gap. And a lot of women are just not aware that this is also something they could invest in and actually have influence.
Exactly. Have major impact and influence what intellectual capital we have on top of our ability to write a check. You know, I have raised funds myself by getting investment. I'm an investor and I'm a founder more than once. And it's seeing all sides of the fence. For me, it's highly, you're looking for a founder that's going to have that tenacity and grit that will work through the 97 iterations that don't work, right? That they still stick with it, because at early seed stage, like that phase, 99% of the time things are going to change drastically. So you better be betting on that person. And that's what I'm about. And that's why Renegade Accelerator exists, because if we can provide the education, the collaboration, the accountability to these women, female leaders, founders, executives, then they are more, they are set up properly to deal with whatever, you know, happens after they green light that idea and work through it. It's just, you know, there's so many curveballs that are about to come your way, and you just have to be ready to know how to catch them.
Yeah. So then what you're saying is the number one thing you look for when you're investing is really the founders. And then you've created this program called the Renegade Accelerator. I think we would love to hear a little bit more about that. On what kind of skills do you teach women? And is it mostly only for women? Is it for founders? You also work with corporates. So please tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, and I'll link it back to that investing, because, you know, my career started with humanizing brands early on and working with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Nike, Hilton Worldwide, Shaquille, you name it. I realized if we can't connect at that human level, then we aren't going to see conversion, period. Like, we need to have some sort of for the maximum conversion, we want human connection. And when I ask a founder, what do you do? It's a test, because I want them to answer from a place of who they are and why they do what they do first. And I'm hoping they do. And if they don't, that's okay, because they could potentially be, you know, guided and coached. But that is one of the first things. So we can transcend the what right out of the gate, because it will come through, right? And with Renegade Accelerator, we're equal parts curriculum education, and we're covering topics like productizing your intellectual property, public speaking for money. I've been a professional public speaker for 12, 13 years, and there's a business around it where women are in demand for stages. Personal branding, growing that footprint and influence online. And I'm not just saying becoming an influencer. You know, these women are leaders, executives, founders first, who have influence online that can convert in a lot of different ways. Podcasting, publishing, And, you know, just also confidence. We see across the board, some of these women are, they have 20 years more experience than I do, yet they still struggle. We all do, you know, with showing up fully at times. And there are ways to overcome that. And there are skills and there are things to do. So having that on the cap table in an investor meeting, having that in a board meeting, we help women get seats on boards, which is another way we can really influence and impact to change where capital goes. So that's the curriculum. And then we have women in 10 different countries, 200 and now almost 50 women who are industry agnostic, and they come together to learn together, and they're cross sharing, their knowledge sharing, as well as learning from the mentors and the team that I, my incredible team, as well as myself. And what's happening when you get that together is pretty powerful, because it's, there's a network effect of 10xing the way we think and execute. We're all about empowerment, of course. That's just built in. But this isn't a, you know, this is about innovation. And we lead with that.
Yeah. And, you know, you said 10xing. We often use that for companies, right? 10x, exponential growth. What does it mean for us to 10x our human mind?
What a good question. I hope you ask everyone that. The biggest hurdles are the ones in our minds. Like, I'm the one that gets in my own way the most. And when we can start to clear that path, I have a talk I give on the renegade mentality. There's five renegade rules that over the last 20 years and working with some of the biggest business icons and innovators, I've started to see trends, 300 interviews. And I see the things they do to get from idea to action. But stay in alignment. And I think that that's the thing. I've been in points in my life where completely out of alignment, you know, the, what you see on the outside is not matching the inside. And that's a recipe for a lot of pain and drama. And, you know, it doesn't net out. That's not going to work. So inside job first, getting the head straight and heart straight. And then that internal swagger shows up with external results big time.
Yeah. It's often our own limiting beliefs. Often I found that about myself, it's me getting in my own way, right? Because you can have these dreams, and what's the narrative you're telling yourself about your own worth or your ability to actually do those things that you really want to do?
Right. Like, if I didn't go into that elevator because I didn't know everything about Twitter, I knew enough to teach someone else what I knew. But sometimes all you need is a 10% edge, because that's 100% more than someone else. And I think that's where especially women can discount their own capabilities and skill set. There's plenty of research that tells us that, right? Women tend to do that, especially with job descriptions and interviewing for new roles. But it's, everyone deals with it. I ask everyone, do you struggle with confidence or imposter syndrome? And I've never heard anyone say no. They may not call it that, but a lot of people have figured out ways to work through it a little quicker or less frequently have it surface. So it's just like anything else. It's a practice.
Yeah. Because I mean, when we say imposter syndrome, or when we say, you know, some people are insecure, or don't have that much confidence, like, it's usually their mind is occupied with all this narrative that's going on in your head, the things that you're telling yourself that's really draining you, right? So imagine if that goes away. And you listen to that other part of you that's more confident, right? And often that's the part of us that was who we were as a child, who was a lot more fearless, a lot more visionary, right? And just bring that person back to life. And I feel like that's been a journey I've had to go through. And now sort of in my 30s, I'm bringing that person back. You know, let's just go and raise our hands and ask for that seat on the table.
Exactly. I love that, Nada. And I think what we've learned, my team and I, in being up close and personal with like a lot of data and a lot of women, is competence creates confidence, but so does community. So there is a exponential factor when you surround yourself with more confident individuals and work with them and learn from them and teach them. And so we see huge growth with community of like-minded, like-hearted, and very driven, innovative individuals. And it's
it's something that there are different types of confidence. Like my boardroom confidence is very different than my bathing suit confidence. Like there are different types. It's not like you are or you aren't. We could add a lot of different dynamics to that.
Exactly. And, you know, Debbie Millman, who has a podcast, she talks about how courage is more important than confidence. Because if you don't have the confidence, but you have the courage to go ahead and do it anyways, that's what often counts for more.
Yep. My colleague, Reagan Walsh, who is the chief renegade officer, she says brave before good. You know, we don't want to fake it till we make it. That's just BS, because you become it when you do it, right? It's not faking. But if you show up brave before you're good, you will become better and good. And I really like that saying too.
But talk to us a little bit about, you know, you help people build brands. You've helped people do that for more than a decade now. And brand is really about authenticity, like showing up as who you are. But it's also that persona that you present to other people, what people feel when they see you. What does it mean when you say brand?
So much to, you know, we could dive so deep into this and where the word even comes from and why it was invented and Walt Disney's thoughts on it and branding of cows. But if we look at classic marketing and branding, right, I went to school for that, as did I'm sure a lot of people watching. It's counterintuitive and kind of counterproductive to everything we learn. Personal branding is, because classic branding and marketing, brands are iconic, they're polished, they're contrived, they're perfect, they are static. We don't mess with them. They hold equity, literally. And people are messy. We're changing daily. We make mistakes left and right. And so I think oftentimes we're trying to fit this concept of personal branding into a template or into a filter or into something that looks nice on a, you know, a grid that matches or a magazine. And it's just not the way humans work. So we have to kind of unwind and undo some of that thinking. And it is different for everyone in terms of how they show up and what they're comfortable with, in terms of how they exude their brand essence and what channels and which content, which ways. But I can say we have to remember, we don't just decide what our brand is. Everyone else does, and how they feel about us is our brand. So a quick test is like, let's say you give me a call and I see your name pop up here on my phone. How I feel when I see your name, or maybe your photo, if you're in my contact list, is your brand. When I Google you or whoever, what I see is their brand to me. And so that just, I think, is mind blowing for some people to realize, wait, I can try so hard, but this is about how people feel about me. So if we think about this being an inside out job, that's where the real progress happens. And that's how we build influence. And the return on influence is pretty massive.
Yeah. And what I really like about what you're saying that really resonates with me about is how often the old school thinking is brands perfect, iconic, like don't mess with the brand. It's kind of like our reputation. Whereas in the world of social media, it's more about the human brand. And that is messy. And that means that you have to allow yourself to be imperfect. That's what happens when you show up on social media on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think a lot of corporates struggle with, when they try to control and limit what's put on social media, not only like coming from the company itself, but also what the employees are able to put on their personal social media platforms, like even LinkedIn, about what they can say about the companies that they work for. So what kind of advice would you give to them on, you know, how really communication and media on branding is changing?
I love this question too, Nada, because it's exactly a portion of what we focus on with Renegade and Renegade Accelerator. And that is, you know, if you look at yourself as having value, because you do, every single one of us does, identifying that value and delivering it when, where, and how your audience wants to receive it, that will connect with people and that will convert, right? So if you are able to just think of your voice of authority, thought leadership, and put the company aside for a second that you work for, let's say you work in corporate, and just look at your core, your value prop. I really suggest people focus on that And then at what level of comfort the company may or may not want to be included, you can then calibrate to that. And HR probably has an opinion and maybe comms, but you should still be able on your own, you know, express your thought leadership. And we see this all the time with heavy hitters, you know, C-level women at big companies, really, you know, balancing that act of I'm representing the company, but I'm also wanting to represent myself and my future. They're getting on stages, they're speaking, they're writing books, they're on podcasts. So as a podcaster myself, I know I have plenty of prep calls with the comms team saying, okay, you can't talk about this, there's so much leverage that you can get too. Mm. Like look at Phoenix Suns. Mm. I don't know that I would have been able to pave that path if I had been working for a refrigerator company, right? I was really leveraging that NBA logo and taking advantage of that opportunity and spotlight. It can be really, you know, a massive asset.
Yeah. And like you said, there's still no rules, right? And it's still evolving. So you can really try to experiment with it and play with it and see what works and keep corporate HR in the loop, right? Have those discussions with them. And you have to sometimes test those boundaries because they're not necessarily set.
Right. Yet. And it's strategic for the companies to embrace the humans behind the brand and the faces, those heartbeats, because that's humanizing, that's innovation, and that will build connections to their consumers. So that is strategic. We used to have, you know, with my first company, a company-wide training on how to humanize and show up as a face of the brand for huge companies, because that is a strategy. Like you can't talk about anyone that lives and breathes and walks, you know, the talk of that brand. They are the brand. It just takes the rest of the company to see it that way.
It's about framing it as sort of untapped marketing potential in all your employees, right? And just empowering them. I have a question here, maybe who's asking, can you share how the journey after you decided to start your own company, what was the biggest challenge and any advice on how to overcome those challenges? So maybe any setbacks that you've had?
Oh, plenty. I happen to have my book right here. I don't typically just have it sitting by me, but this Renegades Write the Rules does go through all of the ups and downs and the characters and the trials and tribulations. But first time entrepreneur in my 20s, I had zero idea what I was doing. And I was experimenting minute by minute and trying to just surround myself with smart people. But I would say, you know, I started out thinking I just wanted to design my own day. You know, we look at the future of work right now, and this was 2009. I thought I was going to consult maybe and just, I like to hike in the middle of the day, but I knew I worked long hours and I'm always working. So why can't I do it from anywhere? So that was the catalyst. And it turned into a big global company, bigger than I imagined. So the biggest lessons, gosh, I have a mentor that says, as a founder, if you don't cry at least, or if you're not on the verge of tears at least once a week, you're probably not trying hard enough. Which it sounds funny, but if I think about it, it's about once a week. I think just trusting yourself, trusting the day, surrounding yourself with smarter people than you are. And every aspect of the business needs attention, right? So we tend to have our core competency, but you have to have, a master in each corner. And in the beginning, it's all you. So lots of trips and falls there. My biggest lesson with my first company was pace. You know, it just was kind of a rocket ship and major burnout. Yeah.
So making sure that you put in breaks and pauses for yourself and pace it, because you know, yes, you're going to grow, but there's only one you and you can't burn out. You can't afford that. And the second thing you said was about trusting yourself. I think that is so important, because in the end of the day, even if you've had a bad week, if you can say to yourself, you know what, I trust myself to get through this, not to like know everything, know all the answers, but be able to reach out to people, reach out to my network and figure it out, right? So it's your own ability to trust yourself.
Exactly. Especially when if you're new at this, let's take Julia Cheek, for example. She is the founder of Everlywell, which is a huge, huge company now. Well, she started it with zero entrepreneurship experience and zero healthcare experience. And she has said to me before, if I would have listened to everyone tell me not to do this, I wouldn't be here right now, because everyone said this isn't going to work. And now I think the valuation, it's probably even bigger now. It's like $4 billion. But it's one of those things where we tend to look outside of ourselves when we don't think we know. And yes, grab the data, but then go through the data and decide, put it through your own filters. What feels right to me based on what I know, because nobody else is sitting exactly in your seat and has as much data as you do about your unique situation. So we tend to look outside ourselves a lot when we're starting.
Yeah, I mean, we have one more question that we're going to take. So many great topics to go in detail with you, Amy. We'll have to bring you back for another session. So Natalie is asking, you talk about how people perceive you in your brand. How about you as a female in a male-dominated environment? How to change the mentality that they have of you and demonstrating that you're so much more than a stereotype that they might have of women?
Great question again, Natalie, you said, right? Thank you, Natalie. I used to say, you know, in a male-dominated industry, it's like, yeah, most of them just are. I don't even have to preface that anymore, but sports and entertainment and tech definitely was. I think there's something to be said for flipping that and reframing it to a major advantage, because yes, it was intimidating at times when I'm sitting in my 20s at the same tables of billionaires that were decades older than me, all men. However, I knew something they wanted to know and they didn't have. And so I tried to remove the gender factor. And this is not for everyone. It is you can see the gaps in every aspect of business and life. Huge gaps in equality and in equity. But when we lead with that, I think we almost handicap ourselves. So showing up like you belong there, because you do, otherwise you wouldn't be there, and leaning into the value you can offer and the results and keeping your head in that game. I think that's always been my playbook. And there've been times where, yeah, it's harder. And there've been times where I think it's easier being the only female. So it's kind of just figuring out what works for you. But there's a woman, Phyllis Newhouse, who is incredible. And she's put some pretty big points on the board. She's even rung the bell in the NASDAQ, yeah, taken SPACs public and stuff. And she said, you know, you're always going to be the only something, the only woman, the only, you know, person of color, the only XYZ, the only, and so what if we flipped being that only to your advantage? And, and I think that reframe goes back to what we're talking about of what's going on up here, and back to community, creating confidence. It's one of those things where who you surround yourself is really going to dictate where you go.
No, I love that. And that's such a great place for us to come to a close. Going around in a circle is basically what you're saying is 10Xing is that's what it's about. It's about being able to reframe anything that could be a setback as an opportunity. So telling yourself, well, if I'm the only one here, there's something I'm definitely bringing in here. And always knowing, like, if you could have complete faith in yourself as I have something that some people don't have, either that's because I'm a different gender or because I'm a younger generation. I mean, when it comes to social media, there's so much the younger generation brings to us in terms of technology and the way they think differently, their buying habits are different. You need those people, even, you know, the younger generation people in the boardroom that we don't have today. And we don't value them because we say, well, you don't have that financial experience or that operational experience, but then you have, you know, six other people on the board who have that experience. So it's really about that fresh perspective that you bring in and framing it as an advantage.
Exactly. Equal value exchange, right? And value can come in so many different forms and types of currency. Value exchange, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We've had a great conversation here on branding, on building your career, on being brave, on how to communicate better, and how to 10X your mind. So thank you so much, Amy. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Nada. Thank you for everyone watching and the great questions as well. And I loved the conversation.
And so this video will be available on YouTube and LinkedIn, and then we're going to post it on Spotify and Apple Podcast next week. So that should be available to a broader audience to listen to whenever they're available. So thank you everyone for joining and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Braving Innovation Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe so you do not miss any of our future episodes. Don't forget to leave us a review and share this podcast with others who might find it valuable. Thank you.